From Indiana to Florida, Massachusetts to Arizona, this is American Radio Journal. On this edition, we continue our two-week series of programs focusing on education freedom. Corey DeAngelis from the American Federation for Children joins us with a state-by-state update on new and expanded school choice opportunities. Public education was once the domain of local school boards, but it has now become nationalized. Scott Parkinson from the Club for Growth has the real story. The COVID-19 pandemic caused many parents to seek out education options other than traditional public schools. Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine is joined by Aaron Smith of the Reason Foundation for a look at the statistics. And the most recent gubernatorial election in Virginia proved parental rights can be a vote-moving issue in general election campaigns. Colin Hanna of Let Freedom Ring USA explains why on this American Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to American Radio Journal. Parents across the nation are demanding more say and more choices in how and where their children are educated. This has resulted in expanded education freedom in many states. For an update on which states are making progress, we turn to Corey DeAngelis. He is a senior fellow at the American Federation for Children. Corey, welcome back to American Radio Journal. We have been talking school choice and education freedom with Corey DeAngelis from the American Federation for Children. He is the senior fellow there. Corey, good to have you back with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Last week, you talked very briefly about some of the states that have made significant progress in giving students education freedom around the country. Let's drill down a little bit more on that today. Tell us, first of all, looking around the country, you've been to many of these states, you've monitored all of them. Which ones are the all-stars in giving children more education freedom?
Yeah, in the past 2 years, six states have gone all in, which what I mean by that is allowing all families to take their state-funded education dollars to the education provider of their choosing, whether that's a public school, private school, charter school, or home-based education option. And the first state to do so in 2022 was Arizona. And Arizona, importantly, has one-seat GOP majorities when they passed this into law, and the governor, Doug Ducey, held the governor's office. And they were able to do it, despite having the slimmest of majorities that could exist. Each Republican had to show up and vote for their party platform issue to empower all families with school choice. So Arizona was the first. When they expanded theirs last year, in 2022, before the expansion, only about 10 or 11,000 students were using their education savings account program, which is the gold standard of school choice policy, allowing for the maximum flexibility on the part of the parents, because you don't have to only use it for private school tuition and fees. With an education savings account, you can use that funding for any approved education expenditure, including home-based education expenses, special needs educational therapies, et cetera. But they expanded it, and within a half a year, when they opened the floodgates, allowing all families to be eligible, they went from 10,000 to over 51,000 students, over a quintupling of the students enrolled in the program. So parents want this. I mean, a lot of families ask, a lot of individuals ask in this debate space whether families want school choice. And you can survey families, and certainly the numbers are high. If you look at the Real Clear Opinion Research polling, 72% of Americans support school choice, with supermajority support among Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. But the real measure is to look at what families do when given the option. And Arizona is a fine example of families wanting an alternative to their residentially assigned government-run school. And since Arizona, West Virginia has gone all in, Iowa, Arkansas, Utah, and Florida. Florida has been a leader in school choice nationally for decades. They've been doing this for quite a while. There's a lot of evidence out of Florida. For example, 11 studies on the topic. 10 of the 11 studies finding that Florida private school competition leads to better outcomes in the public school. So school choice is a rising tide that lifts all boats. And Florida, although it was one-upped by Arizona in 2022, I mean, you can see the friendly competition that's been going on among the red states Well, Governor DeSantis in Florida was able to reclaim his school choice crown in 2023 by signing into law House Bill 1 that was championed by Speaker Paul Renner and supported by leadership in the Senate. I mean, it passed their House with overwhelming majorities by an 83-27 vote, going all in on school choice in Florida, with even four Democrats voting in support in the Florida House. So it could be a bipartisan issue. It certainly should be. And I think it will continue towards a trend of more bipartisanship, hopefully in the future. The more that the Republicans lean into school choice as a political winner, the more it's going to become politically disastrous for Democrats to oppose it. So I think we'll have more Democrats defecting on the issue as we move forward. But it's going to rely on the GOP to become the parents' party and experience some short-term political victories for it to be nonpartisan in the longer term.
Corey, you mentioned that these are the states that have gone all in on school choice. Now, other states maybe haven't been able to go quite so far. What does school choice look like in the states that only been able to maybe take half steps toward full education freedom?
Yeah, over 30 states now have some form of private school choice. And that includes Pennsylvania, where they have a couple of tax credit scholarship programs. So this is another way to structure private school choice programs where you incentivize donations to scholarship granting organizations who then give that funding to certain categories of students to have them take it to private schools if you do it through that scholarship method, or if you do it in the form of an education savings account, could be used for other purchases as well. But most of the existing programs in the states not listed are only limited to certain categories of students, either targeted to lower income families or students with special needs. And I think those programs are obviously steps in the right direction. Any expansion of educational opportunity for any groups of students is definitely a win, but it should be available to all students. Every single family is guaranteed a public education in every single state. That publicly provided education doesn't have to happen in a government-run institution. Regardless of your income, you can send your kid to the public school and have that taxpayer money be allocated for your child. You should be eligible to take a portion of that funding to the private sector if you want. The money's meant for educating the child, not for propping up and protecting a particular institution. It shouldn't belong to the government schools. It shouldn't belong to the private schools either, to be clear. But it's meant for the child, and it should be directed by the parents, regardless of income. And there's a lot of middle-income families that are left out of the existing programs that can't really afford to have the meaningful option of paying twice, paying once to the tax system for the government school, and then having to pay out of pocket for the private school that they prefer for their child. No one should be forced to pay twice, regardless of your income. So I'm glad to see that the momentum we're seeing in recent years is more towards a universal push that allows all families to have that opportunity. I live in Texas, and we're seeing a big push for universal school choice here. Texas would be the crown jewel for education freedom, being it would expand access to the largest number of students just because Texas is the largest red state. And they passed a bill 18-13 through their Senate recently, and there's some discussions in the House as to what it's going to look like moving forward. But I'm optimistic about the prospects for success in a state like Texas, too, where Governor Abbott has been campaigning on the issue and pushing it, rallying families across the state and over a dozen cities. He's also made it an emergency item this session, and the Texas GOP has made school choice a top 8 GOP legislative priority this session as well. So there's a lot of good momentum across the country. And again, it's towards these bigger proposals. And I think that's a step in the right direction. I think it's a smart move politically, too, because if you can get more people who will benefit from the program, you'll get more people to fight for it. And on the other hand, when you push for these incremental reforms that are targeted, well, you lessen your side, the proponent's side. You get fewer people to push for it. But you do little to nothing to get the teachers unions to to slow their roll and to minimize their opposition. They act like the sky is falling, whether that's a small program targeted to disadvantaged populations or whether it's a whole hog program allowing all families to have education freedom. So if they're going to scream bloody murder no matter what, you might as well go all in and push for universal school choice.
Corey DeAngelis is Senior Fellow at the American Federation for Children. We've been talking about education freedom, school choice opportunities in states all around the country, making a lot of progress, but much more work to be done. Corey, tell us a bit about the American Federation for Children and where can folks go on the web?
I'm a senior fellow at the American Federation for Children. We're the only national school choice advocacy group that has C3, C4, and PAC capabilities. We make the logical argument for school choice, but we also hold politicians accountable for those who want to push to fight to trap kids and particularly low-income kids and failing government-run schools. We fight to fund students, not systems. And you can learn more about the American Federation for Children at federationforchildren.org.
Corey DeAngelis of the American Federation for Children. Corey, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth, where education freedom and school choice is a big issue and a growing issue for candidates all around the country. We're going to talk about that with Scott Parkinson. Scott, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Loman.
Of course, everybody looks at school boards and local school districts, Scott, as a local issue, maybe even a county issue in some states. Are you seeing it becoming more and more of a nationalized issue for candidates who are running for the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House?
Yeah, and I think it is because many parents were home during the coronavirus pandemic and they witnessed the lack of high-quality education for their children due to virtual learning. And it was like you're actually seeing what the curriculum was. And it created a brand new opportunity for us to look at K through 12 education, school choice, and the school freedom movement. During the coronavirus pandemic, Club for Growth created an affiliated super PAC that is called School Freedom Fund. And we've used that to highlight really more of like a parents' rights school choice movement that is getting nationalized because of what happened in 2020 and 2021. I think that it's a very, very powerful issue. It's nationalized because for many times you've got Republicans that say, well, abolish the Department of Education. This is a state and local issue. We shouldn't be involved at all. But Democrats have dug in. They've promoted more of a federalized system that is empowering teachers' unions, is destroying the traditional American culture, the American history that we should all be learning, and it's in favor of sort of wokeism. And when wokeism is injected by national Democrats, Republicans have to use their national platform to fight back. And I think that's part of what has inspired so many brand new political activists in the school freedom, parents' rights movement over the last few years.
In 2021, Scott, the tip of the spear, if you will, of this movement was Glenn Youngkin, who is now, of course, the governor of Virginia. Why was that so successful for Glenn Youngkin?
Well, there's a number of reasons. That's such a loaded question, but I'll try to unpack it as quickly as I can. Governor Youngkin tapped into a movement of frustrated parents, and there was a public safety issue with what was happening in Northern Virginia and Loudoun County through the sexual assault of a student from a so-called transgender student. That same student that committed the heinous act then created another sexual assault instance on another student because school administrators swept it under the rug. And when the parent came to a school board meeting, they escorted him out in handcuffs. And I think that it just created this deep frustration among many parents that you've basically got school administrators that are trying to indoctrinate children rather than educate them. And Glenn Youngkin was able to tap into that movement and that story from a freedom perspective and from a parents' rights perspective. And I don't think that that's going away. I think it's going to continue to be one of the defining issues in the next big election. Everything that's happening in Loudoun is not resolved. we've still got a woke posture from the school administrators in that county. It's one of the worst in terms of promoting this indoctrination of anywhere that I can imagine throughout the country. It's also starting to translate into other states. I think there was an issue in Texas that was recently released where a little girl was sexually assaulted under her desk in the classroom, and teachers didn't tell the parents. The girl told her cousin because she was acting differently, and the cousin got it out of her. And instead, the school administrator said, well, we're trying to interview all the students to figure out what happened. That's bullcrap. And it's creating a safety issue for students in the classroom. And I think that that is the long-term determining factor for school freedom, for all students to feel safe the day that they show up to school. For so long, and especially when I was a kid, you were supposed to be able to talk to your teacher. You were supposed to be able to talk to a police officer if there was a problem. And when the teachers and school administrators are sweeping this problem under the rug in favor of wokeism and indoctrination, I think that there's going to be a massive revolt from parents that ultimately just want their kids to get math, science, reading, and to be safe in the classroom.
And we are seeing in states all across the country, Scott, where parents are getting more freedom. You, of course, have worked in the state of Florida. They are, once again, a national leader in this.
Yeah. Governor DeSantis has done a fantastic job in the school freedom movement. They're pushing ESAs as an opportunity for anybody to obtain the high-quality education that all students deserve. We also had huge reforms in Arizona. We've had great work done in states like Arkansas and Oklahoma and Iowa, and the list goes on and on and on. This is a real movement. School freedom, school choice, parents' rights. We need to put kids first. That means making sure that they can have access to the highest quality education with the dollars that need to follow the backpack, the student, the family, not the educational institution.
And we are going to continue to focus on education freedom with Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, tell us a little bit about the club.
Yeah, Club for Growth is a membership organization based out of Washington, D.C. Anybody can join. Sign up for free at clubforgrowth.org.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, we'll talk with you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
The COVID-19 pandemic opened many parental eyes to what the public schools were teaching their children. For a look at the impact, Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine talks with Aaron Smith of the Reason Foundation.
The COVID-19 pandemic really shifted the discussion around school choice, shifted the way in which I think parents and students relate with their school district, and I think gave many people a reason to start looking around and trying to find different educational options for themselves and for their students. And that is something that we have to take a closer look at, something that we are taking a closer look at in this week's edition of American Radio Journal. Hi, folks. I'm Eric Boehm with Reason Magazine, and joining me again this week for part two of our interview is Aaron Smith. He's the Director of Education Reform at the Reason Foundation. He joins us on the phone now. Aaron, thanks for being here once again.
Thanks again, Eric.
Let's pick up where we left off last week. We were talking, for people who maybe missed that, we were talking about Wisconsin's open enrollment system. Briefly, tell us a little bit about what that is. This is basically like direct district-to-district competition in the school choice arena.
Yeah, Wisconsin's open enrollment policy, which dates back to 1999, essentially gives students access to any available public school seat in the state. So rather than just attending their residentially assigned school or school district, students can easily transfer out to other opportunities in non-assigned school districts. And it's worked very well. So the program has grown from about 2,400 students in the late 90s to over 70,000 students today. And research has given it high marks.
How does this model compare with some of the other things we see in the sort of school choice arena? You've got, you know, obviously charter schools have been quite successful in a number of places. States, including Wisconsin, very prominently have experimented with vouchers, which allow students to pursue private education more affordably. But this kind of direct competition between districts is something that sort of fits alongside those things, but in some ways maybe is even a better option for many parents.
Yeah, I see it as a complement. I think private school choice in the form of education savings accounts, I think ESAs are the gold standard of school choice, but I think there's a large role to be played for open enrollment policies. Regardless of how well ESAs are doing, and I see some pretty pretty good momentum across states in terms of adopting ESA policies. The fact is about 84% of students still attend traditional public schools. So rather than wait for every student to have access to an ESA, open enrollment gives students access to more opportunities today.
You mentioned that about 84% of all students still attend public schools, but of course, in many places, most recently in a piece that you wrote looking at California, we've seen student enrollment drop in public schools. That is certainly problematic for those individual students that are no longer attending schools, but I think it's a cultural and social problem as well. How does expanding school choice help address that type of situation that we're seeing as we come out of the pandemic?
I think compared to pre-pandemic levels, public school enrollment is down by about 1.2 million students across the country. Some states like New York, Oregon, Mississippi, their enrollments are down by 5%, which is catastrophic for them in a lot of ways in terms of their school district budgets. But I see open enrollment and public school choice as a way for them to stop the bleeding. Polls are very clear. Parents want more customization. Parents want more choice. I think 70% of Democrats and 67% of Republicans support open enrollment laws. And I see them as a vehicle to keeping students within the public education system and serving them.
We're talking with Aaron Smith. He's the director of Educational Reform for the Reason Foundation, talking about some of the benefits of public-to-public school choice. Aaron, just a minute or so left here. I want to wrap up on this point, though. It seems like teachers' unions are so typically one of the biggest opponents of expanding school choice. I wonder if this, does the public-to-public school choice kind of short-circuit that opposition in some way, because we're not talking about removing students and therefore removing some funding from the public school system. It's just kind of creating a different mechanism for students to go and seek an education in a different school district. Or is there still opposition there just because of the nature of these things politically?
For the most part, the opposition is still there. They want to uphold the status quo at all costs. Missouri is a good example. They had a pretty weak bill, actually, this past session, and the teacher union there worked to block it. But we do see promise in other states such as South Carolina. They've actually come out in favor of open enrollment. And so we do see some promise. I think they've gotten the memo that parents want choice. And if they want to keep parents within the public school system, they'll need to meet their demands.
As Aaron said, yeah, parents want more choice. You heard him with the numbers there as well. This cuts across political lines, Democrats, Republicans, everybody looking for more choice and certainly to deliver better educational outcomes, which is something that I think really became front and center for a lot of parents during the pandemic. This is one way to do it. There's lots of options out there, but more states, I would hope, are going to take a look at this type of public-to-public competition, school-district-to-school-district competition as a way of opening up school choice. Aaron, thanks for taking some time with us and joining us for this two-week interview. Really interesting stuff.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
And again, you can check out more of Aaron's work online at reason.org. That's the Reason Foundation. Aaron Smith is the director of education reform for the Reason Foundation. They're the nonprofit entity, the think tank that owns and operates Reason Magazine, where I work. Check out our work online at reason.com. I'm Eric Boehm, and you can catch me right back here next week on another edition of American Radio Journal.
Parental rights and school choice could become a vote-moving issue in the 2024 elections. So says Colin Hanna of Let Freedom Ring USA on this American Radio Journal commentary.
There's a term in political science called a vote-moving issue. That means an issue important enough that a voter could decide whom to support almost entirely based on the candidate's position on that one issue, even if the candidate in question is a member of the opposite party to the voter's usual preference. It's not quite the same thing as a so-called single issue, but it's close. Immigration and gun rights are good examples of vote-moving issues, especially in the South and Southwest. Support for military aid to Ukraine is a vote-moving issue for some. Some libertarian Republicans are opposed to more aid to Ukraine, while some liberal Democrats, typically opposed to massive military spending, are in favor of continuing to fund weapons for Ukraine. Voter ID and gender issues are other vote-moving issues, especially at the state level. Here's another issue shaping up to be a vote-moving issue in 2024. Parental rights in education, including curriculum content and school choice. Although education is typically considered a state or local issue, the George Bush 2000 campaign showed that it can be nationalized. The No Child Left Behind proposal was politically helpful to the presidential ticket, even if it later failed to live up to its promise. It was a vote-moving issue then, and Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin's successful race 2 years ago provided a textbook example of how quickly an earlier issue can be revived and elevated to the very top of those that voters care about. The broad framework of the argument concerns the proper authority over education. Should it be parents or unions? The Hechinger Report on Innovation in Education says that groups like the National Parents Union aim to carry the torch of underrepresented parents around the country, acting at times as a counterweight to powerful teachers' unions. Given the NPU's stated goal of reflecting the interests of millions of diverse and minority parents across political ideologies, it has the potential to draw support from those who are typically on the left side of the spectrum. The current teachers' strike in Oakland, California, shows how stuck in the past teachers' unions are. The national TV coverage of the strike invariably includes the chant, "Oakland is a union town." That is tantamount to an admission that the teachers' strike is really about union power, not teaching. School choice offers an alternative to union control and a return to the fundamentals of education. Business Insider reports that the Republican Party is accelerating its push to remake public education, and it's already becoming a key piece of the 2024 presidential nomination contest. While battles over how classrooms should teach about race and LGBTQ topics have fired up the GOP base, the expansion of school vouchers is taking fresh hold in red states. The vouchers use public dollars to move K-12 students out of public schools and into private charter and magnet schools, and in a few cases, even offsetting homeschooling costs. Iowa, Utah, West Virginia, Florida, and Arkansas have moved to make vouchers widely available. North Dakota, Texas, Ohio, Virginia, and Tennessee could be next. Republicans embrace school choice, saying children should not be trapped in failing public schools. Instead, they say, students should be able to attend whichever school is best for them, regardless of their family's income. Former Governor Jeb Bush started the school choice push in Florida more than two decades ago, and this year, Governor Ron DeSantis is taking it across the finish line by making it available to families at any income level. Florida has regained the championship belt in terms of being the leading, most expansive driver of educational choice in the country, Tommy Schultz, CEO of the American Federation for Children, told Business Insider. Everybody eyeing higher office is seeing how popular this is and trying to one-up each other. The controversies over curriculum content in traditional public schools and school choice as an alternative to public schools will combine in the 2024 race to become true vote-moving issues that promise to pay political dividends to Republicans all across the nation at all levels, federal, state, and local. This has been Colin Hanna of Let Freedom Ring for American Radio Journal.
American Radio Journal is heard on public affairs-minded radio stations all across the country, including WNCW-FM in Omak, Washington, KBZN-FM in Salt Lake City, Utah, along with WNAU-AM in New Albany, Mississippi. American Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, which underwrite the costs of this program. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. Learn more about American Radio Journal and hear expanded versions of some interviews aired on this program. Please visit our website, AmericanRadioJournal.com. I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to American Radio Journal. American Radio Journal, lighting the brush fires of freedom.